We're going to pick up where we left off yesterday in regard to the Yahweh Shammah city. And we thought about not discussing the pilgrimage and that being the staging point for the pilgrimage or pathway up to the temple worship. But we just thought, well, we're here at this subject, the Yahweh Shammah city. So we'll go ahead and cover that at this point. But yesterday, again, the view, or the my perceived view of the view from the Yahweh Shammah city, as it is narrated or is spoken of or accounted of in Ezekiel chapter 39, verses 11 through 16. Those of the mortal nations that come up to worship at the temple, they will leave from the city and traverse under and around to the east side of the Dead Sea, or what was once the Dead Sea, now healed, or a resurrected sea. It is described in Ezekiel 39:11 as the valley of the passengers, to pass through or traverse on the east of the sea. Moving northward, they then swing around the northern side and come towards Jerusalem from a northeastern direction. Knowing that the shortest distance, and we mentioned this yesterday, knowing that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, why will such a detour be required? Why will such a detour be required? And as we stated, it will act as a parabolic lesson that will teach of the destruction of the wicked and the hope and salvation that is extended to the nations. They first pass through the valley of Haman Gog, the multitude of Gog. The authorized version, and still speaking of Ezekiel chapter 39, the authorized version, verse 11, implies that the stench of the dead bodies will catch the attention of the passengers. But please note that noses is not in the original, and the word graves is not Sheol, but is kibar, which is singular in nature and indicates a memorial grave or some kind of mausoleum. Rotherham renders this as a place of memorial for burial. This valley of burial will lead to a city on the northwest corner of the Dead Sea, which is called Hamona, or the multitude. Here they will be continually reminded of the fate of those who oppose Yahweh. In Exodus 23 and 2, it states, "Thou shalt not follow a multitude to evil, to do evil. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil." In these modern times, we call it the herd mentality, following the herd. Much easier to do than to not follow the herd. Hamona will constitute a city of death and remembrance, which is a reminder that the wages of sin is death. We have mentioned that noses is not in the original, and it is not even implied. The word stop means to bridle or muzzle. Those who pass through will stop to consider the events of the great battle, just as they do with modern-day battlefields. The great battle, the Gogian invasion. And this will be treated in the same manner as we do with our battlefields when we go through and see history brought alive to us. But this will also teach a lesson in regard to a bridling or muzzling of the tongue. A bridling or muzzling of the tongue. The same root word rendered bridle is connected with Psalm 39 and 1. I said, I will take heed to my ways that I sin not with my tongue, and I will keep my mouth with a bridle. Consider our third period class yesterday regarding the tongue. Here, they will be reminded to guard their tongue and to avoid the murmurings and rebelliousness of flesh and the destructive power of the Yahweh of hosts, who they are about to approach in Jerusalem. Again, we will repeat that. Here they will be reminded to guard their tongue and to avoid the murmurings and rebelliousness of flesh and the destructive power of the Yahweh of hosts, who they are about to approach in Jerusalem. So in essence, stop, consider the wages of sin, close your mouth, and prepare your heart and mind as you approach Yahweh of hosts in His holy temple. And we just in this last class period considered the solemnity of this approach and the right manner in which it is done. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. So this pathway acts as a lesson of remembrance, but also a lesson of preparation for the mind, the heart, and especially the mouth. They then turn west and proceed toward Jerusalem. First passing through the valley of Achor. The valley of Achor. Let's go to Hosea chapter 2, verse 15. Hosea 2 and 15. Verse 15 states, "And I will give her her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of hope." The valley of Achor for a door of hope. Also, let's go to Isaiah chapter 65, verses 9 and 10. Isaiah 65, verses 9 and 10. "And I will bring forth a seed out of Jacob and out of Judah, an inheritor of my mountains, and mine elect shall inherit it, and my servants shall dwell therein. And Sharon shall be a fold of flocks, and the valley of Achor a place for the herds." Please note that. "A place for the herds to lie down in, for my people that have sought me." For my people that have sought me. Achor means trouble or disturbance. We think back to the incident with Joshua. It is a troubling or disturbance. This is where Achan and his family were stoned for disobedience and covetousness. But now, this area will function as a passageway towards Jerusalem. A path or doorway of hope where the animals for sacrifice may be obtained. Where the animals for sacrifice may be obtained. So through trouble, Achan or Achor, through trouble or trial, now Achan or Achor stands as a sign of hope. So through trouble and trial, there will be hope. While Hamona stands as a memorial for sin and death, Jerusalem will stand as the symbol for life and hope, the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 23. Jeremiah 31 and 23. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, is yet they shall use this speech in the land of Judah and in the cities thereof, when I shall bring again their captivity. The Lord bless thee, O habitation of justice and mountain of holiness. A habitation of justice and a mountain of holiness. Therein lies hope. Psalm 122, verses 1 through 6. Psalm 122, verses 1 through 6. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go unto the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Whether the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. To be compact is to join or to have fellowship. And then Isaiah chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. Isaiah chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof, by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of burning, and the Lord will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion and upon her assemblies a cloud and smoke by day, and the shining of a flaming fire by night, for upon all the glory shall be a defense. And there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime from the heat, and for a place of refuge, and for a covert from storm and from rain. This fifth verse, and just as a side note, is often when we look at depictions of the temple, the future temples, that we can see the most holy or the mountain structure that comes out in the middle, but it was most likely that that will be shrouded in some kind of covering and not be seen. This parable, figuratively taught through physical and visual experience, will teach of the goodness and severity of God. And as we know, man is in need of constant reminding. Man is in need of constant reminding. Now we go on to Jerusalem itself. Last but certainly not least, we consider Jerusalem in regard to the glorified land of promise, which helps us to transition to our final subject of worship in the age to come. Isaiah 62, verses 1 through 4, and we have a hymn that reflects this teaching. For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace. For Zion's sake I will not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. A lamp that burneth, or a light, as Brother Graydon referenced this morning. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory. And thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord, or of Yahweh, shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown, and crown there is actually feminine, a bridal crown of glory in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy God. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Beulah. For the Lord delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. We also read from Psalm 87 and 3. His foundation is in the holy mountains. The Lord loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God. The faithful throughout the ages have been commanded to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. under Zion's king, this prayer will be realized when Jerusalem finally reflects the meaning of its name, peace. No longer will Jerusalem be a city in the traditional sense of the word. Yes, it will be a place of great activity and gathering, but it will stand as the royal and priestly sanctuary and palace of Christ for Israel and the nations. It will be a city transformed, both physically and spiritually. As we have already mentioned, it is not our intent to dive into the details of this magnificent structure that will be built there. And that, of course, is in a study in and of itself. But we will make reference to certain aspects of it. The physical change to Jerusalem will be nothing short of remarkable. Nothing short of remarkable. In Ezekiel 40, verse 2, we know that when Ezekiel received the vision, that he was set in vision upon a very high mountain. Now, we know that that has both physical reference as well as spiritual references as well, as Brother Sid brought out the other night. Zechariah 14 and 4. Let's go ahead and turn that up. Zechariah chapter 14 and 4. Not that we're unfamiliar with it, but let's read it. Speaking of Christ's return to save the Jews in Jerusalem and the final death blow to the Gogian invader, it states, "And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and towards the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it towards the south." We understand that the Mount of Olives is split by a very great earthquake, and the setting off of the great or African rift fault line that runs from southern Syria directly through the Jordan Valley down into Africa. You can look that up. It's very easy to find information on that, which we know will set off probably great cataclysm throughout the earth itself. Zechariah 14, verses 9 and 10, that same chapter. The area is referred to as being lifted up and turned into a plain from Geba, 7 miles north of Jerusalem, to Rimmon, about 40 miles southwest of Jerusalem. And that's the bluish tint that we have indicated on the map there, from Geba to Rimmon. Just a general idea or general area of the great plain that's supposed to be raised in great elevation. Jeremiah 30 and 18, we're told, and it's been referenced several times this week, "And the city shall be builded upon her own heap." In other words, Jerusalem is to be built upon the fill of its own ruins. And remember when we showed yesterday the picture of Jerusalem as it is now, that Jerusalem will no longer exist. And then Ezekiel 47, verses 1 through 12. Let's go ahead and read that. Ezekiel 47, verses 1 through 12. "Afterward, he brought me again unto the door of the house, and behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward. For the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came down from the right side of the house at the south side of the altar. Then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward, and led me about the way without unto the utter gate by the way that looketh eastward. And behold, there ran out waters on the right side. And when the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits, and he brought me through the waters." The waters were for the Anses. Again, he measured 1,000 and brought me through the waters. The waters were to the ankles. That's terrible. I said that. I can't see it. Again, he measured 1,000 and he brought me through the waters. The waters were to the knees. Again, he measured 1,000 and brought me through. The waters were to the loins. Afterward, he measured 1,000 and it was a river that I could not pass over. For the waters were risen, waters to swim in, a river that could not be passed over. And he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen this? Then he brought me and caused me to return to the brink of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, at the bank of the river were very many trees on the one side and on the other. Then said he unto me, These waters issue out toward the east country, and go down into the desert, and go into the sea, which being brought forth into the sea, the waters shall be healed. And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the rivers shall come, shall live. And there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come thither. For they shall be healed, and everything shall live, whither the river cometh. And it shall come to pass that the fishers shall stand upon it from Engedi, even unto Engleam. They shall be a place to spread forth nets. Their fish shall be according to their kinds, as the fish of the great sea, exceeding many. But the miry places thereof, and the marshes thereof, shall not be healed. They shall be given to salt. And by the river upon the bank thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat whose leaf shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to his months, because their waters they issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and the leaf thereof for medicine. Here, great description is given of the amount of water that will flow out of the south side of the temple, out from under the altar, creating a river that flows out eastward towards the Dead Sea, therefore transforming it into a living sea. And Zechariah 14 and 8 informs us of a stream that flows towards the Hinder, or Mediterranean, as well. This, of course, involves a massive change in elevations that will help explain prophetic passages that give reference to the mountain of the Lord. Mount Zion is now 2,524 feet above sea level. Mount Zion future will be 3,819 feet above sea level. At least that's the estimate. The Dead Sea now is 1,292 feet below sea level. The Dead Sea future will raise at least 1,300 feet. The geographic transformation is, in fact, remarkable. But what is even more remarkable is the construction of the temple itself. When we visualize the kingdom age, our minds probably more often than not immediately revert to the illustrations of Brother Sully or of others who have done their own renditions based upon his work. Though the temple itself is not the entirety of the kingdom in regard to its workings and character, it certainly stands as its crown jewel, and which Yahweh has chosen to give us a remarkable degree of detail regarding its appearance, service, and pattern. Within a 40-year time period, this structure of massive size, with each wall extending approximately 1 mile, its corner towers rising 480 feet or 48 stories high, and the walls of the inner temple extending up some 175 feet or 17 stories, and with massive volumes of water flowing out of it, there is nothing that can compare to it, even in this modern era, in regard to sheer size, utility, and beauty. It took 100 years to build the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, which is nothing more, and as we should have been drawn to our attention, is nothing more than a gaudy, hideous hut in comparison to the temple in Jerusalem. 100 years for a structure of apostasy, which is nothing, and 40 years for the magnificent structure that we will see in the coming kingdom. Let's turn to Psalm 48. Psalm 48. Verse 1 reads, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountains," or the mountain of His holiness. Verse 2, beautiful for situation or elevation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great King. Verse 4, "For lo, the kings were assembled. They passed by together. They sought, and so they marveled. They were troubled and hasted away." Now, this was mentioned the other night, but remember the Queen of Sheba's reaction to seeing Solomon's court. We were told that no breath was left in her. She was absolutely dumbfounded by what she saw. How so will the kings of the earth, at least those kings that are smart enough to make peace with Christ, when they see what is before them? Verses 12 and 13. "Walk about Zion and go round about her." Walk about Zion and go round about her. Which will be, in fact, the case as its visitors enter from the north and will exit out of the south. Walk about Zion and go round about her. "Tell the towers," which means to recount or relate what they had seen to those they return home to. "Tell the towers, mark ye well her bulwarks. Consider," which means to pass between or within her palaces. "Mark ye well her bulwarks, pass between or within her palaces, that you may tell it to the generation following." Walk about Zion and go round about her. Just as the Gentiles of Tyre helped in the construction of Solomon's temple, no doubt those nations that are wise enough to kiss the sun lest he be angry will make affinity with Christ, as did Hiram with David and Solomon, and assist in the providing of precious materials, if not bear its menial burdens. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 60. Verse 9. "Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring thy sons from far, the Jews that are scattered about the earth, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of the Lord thy God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall," or leaders, we might say, and that's what we meant to reference earlier in regarding to our previous passage. "And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee." Upon the completion of this glorious structure, a resurrected city and sanctuary built upon its former ruins will stand as a jewel of unsurpassed glory, not only in its appearance, but the spiritual truth, restoration, and redemption which it represents not only for Israel, but the entire earth. Ezekiel 37 and 28. "And the heathen shall know that I, the Lord, do sanctify Israel, when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore." When my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them. Isaiah chapter 2:2-3. And this has been referenced as well. "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Unlike the polluting influences that plagued Jerusalem in the past, and that have long found refuge and prosperity in Rome, there will be no threat of such under Christ's watchful eye in the eyes of his ministers. As we are told in Zechariah, in that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Lord, and the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and see therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. No more a Canaanite, a merchant of falsehood. Ezekiel 44 and 9. No stranger or foreigner, uncircumcised in heart, nor uncircumcised in flesh, shall enter into my sanctuary of any stranger that is among the children of Israel. Not what I would consider to be a very inclusive setting, a very exclusive setting. Now we go on to the subject of a priestly kingdom and worship. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 5. Revelation chapter 5. Reading from Revelation 5, we read of the songs of praise to the Lamb that come from three distinct groups. And that which will likely be sung at the opening of the millennial age. Verses 9 and 10 of this fifth chapter state, and this is the song of the redeemed saints, typified by the four living creatures of the cherubim and the 24 elders. And what they say is this, and they sung a new song saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our God kings and priests, or a priestly kingdom, and we shall reign on the earth. Verse 12, another song, the song of the angels. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. Verse 13, and then the general chorus, including all mankind, and every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea, and all that are in them, heard I saying, Blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. For the Aeon, Aeon of Aeons. It is this role of the saints as a priestly kingdom or royal priesthood, directly represented by the 24 elders, rooted in the 24 orders of the priesthood that David set up. This is what we wish now to turn our attention. The first, as we have already made mention of in an earlier class, as long as sin is present, the sin flesh nature as well as personal iniquity that stems from that nature, there is a need for a priesthood to officiate for the sins of the people and to provide mediation between God and man for the purpose of atonement. as well as providing instruction. Providing instruction, as was to be the duty of the Levites, to provide instruction in the way of the tree of life. Though the kingdom age is a restoration of the Israelitish kingdom, a return of the first dominion, a true restitution, it will not be built on the same plan, which was after the Mosaic law or system. It will be an improvement in all forms. There will be a change in the law, as well as how it is administered. Though, there are certain elements of the old law that will be retained with the means now of perfect, or at that time I should say, with the means of perfect execution. We read in Jeremiah 31 and 31, I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. Not according to that covenant. Before his crucifixion, Jesus stated, this cup is the New Testament or covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. Paul informs the brethren in his letter to the Hebrews, the 8th chapter, referencing the same words spoken by Jeremiah, that Christ is the very mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. For in that the first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. Concurrent with the setting aside of the old covenant was the doing away of its priesthood, founded upon the house of Levi, and the introduction of a new high priest and a new priesthood. Christ's first office as high priest, and this is current, is the development of his own house. The development of his own house. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6. But Christ as a son over his own house, whose house are we if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end? This house, constituted of the saints, is a royal priesthood at present in a preliminary sense, which offers praise and the sacrifices of spiritual service. But their manifestation and power as kings and priests unto God will not be realized until the kingdom and age to come. Now, we have been to this reference once before, but we wish to clarify a particular statement found in it. Looking again at Isaiah chapter 61, verse 6. Isaiah 61, verse 6. We used it in a different context. I believe it was yesterday. Looking at Isaiah 61 and 6, we read, But ye shall be named the priests of the Lord. Men shall call you the ministers of our God. Though there is an application here to Israel after the flesh, which will in fact be involved with certain priestly duties in a very limited and menial sense, with a revived Levitical order, the full implication is to true Israel, Israel after the Spirit. If the full context of the chapter is kept in view, as we read in verse 2, them that mourn in Zion, who mourns for Zion at the present time? Verse 3, and that they might be called trees of righteousness. It will be seen the ultimate intention of this passage. Christ, in speaking of the reward of the righteous, stated, Blessed are ye that mourn, for ye shall be comforted. Such are the mourners of Zion, which will constitute the priests of the Lord in the age to come. As verse 10 of Isaiah 61 goes on to proclaim, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He hath covered me with a robe of righteousness or immortality. As a bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with her jewels. We read in Revelation 20, verse 6, blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. A literal 1,000 years. But there will be two classes of priests in that coming kingdom age. Just as Aaron and his sons had the tribe of Levi at their service for the menial task and labors, so too will the immortal priest class have a mortal Levitical order to assist. The Spirit, through Ezekiel in chapter 40, verses 45 and 46, describes these two classes in this way. The lower order as the keepers of the charge of the house. The higher order as the keepers of the charge of the altar. These are the sons of Zadok among the sons of Levi, which come near to the Lord to minister unto him. We will continue this thought in the morning. Thank you.